Welcome to Live from HCIC 2023, a podcast series bringing you front row insights from the industry's brightest minds. In this 12-part series, we delve into the heart of the trends impacting health systems with leading experts, senior executives, and thought leaders, as recorded live at the Healthcare Internet Conference in November of 2023. This series is brought to you by Greystone, Bowstring Media, and Touchpoint Media. Listen in as we hear from our industry leaders on the latest innovative strategies and efforts that are shaping our space.
Well, we're here live at HCIC with Ed Marks. Ed, welcome to the program today. I'm excited to talk to you.
Yeah, likewise. I'm super excited as well. I'm stoked.
Yeah, exactly. And you keynoted here today, and we're going to talk a little bit about what your keynote presentation is about today. And interestingly enough, you didn't even talk about technology at a technology conference. And I think that's an interesting angle for us to take. But before we jump in, would you mind sharing with the people that are maybe watching us or listening to us a little bit about yourself and background?
Yeah, for sure. So really my healthcare career started when I was 16. So I was a janitor at Peterson Air Force Base Medical Center. And it just transformed who I was. I mean, it's hard to articulate it when I was 16 because I was listening to Black Sabbath on my Sony Walkman, you know? But I was like, I know that I was supposed to be in healthcare. I didn't know how it manifests itself, but I just knew that was it for me in my life, you know? So when I went to the university, I needed money because my grades were so bad. There's no way I'm getting a scholarship. So I joined the Army Reserve. In part, my dad was a long time in the Army, but also it provided additional income. And so they said, you could do whatever you want. And on that list was combat medic. And that's cool. That aligns with who I am, right? Or who I think I'm called to be. So I went and did that, and I loved it. It was a great experience. I went off to school, ROTC, those sort of things. And when I graduated, that longing in my heart was still there for healthcare. So I tried really hard at our local hospital, which is now part of the UC Health System, University of Colorado Health System, to do any job that I could. And I got rejected for everything. I was either overeducated or underexperienced, you know, because I was a recent college grad. And so finally, there was this opportunity to be an anesthesia tech on a temporary level. And so I leveraged that combat medic experience, got into the OR. It was like world changing, right? I'm in the OR every day watching these surgeries. I just loved it. And I thought about medical school. Now I'm like 24, 25, had my first child. So it's like, I probably can't do the medical school thing, but yeah, especially as a psych major who barely passed.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh, I don't know. So then there's opportunity to open it up in marketing, actually in physician relations. So I took that role that became my first salary job in healthcare. I just loved everything about it. And then I had this traumatic experience. I won't go into it for the sake of time, but a traumatic experience with the birth of our oldest daughter. And it all came back to the application of tech. I was working with the IT people and marketing, helping them. And it was really this combination of marketing, tech, clinical that saved my daughter's life. And at that point, I knew exactly what my call was in healthcare. It was to leverage technology to save people's lives. And from there, I went directly into technology, eventually became a CIO at several health systems that people might recognize. And today I'm sort of independent, helping companies connect better in the marketplace, but also on the board for a couple of different health systems. So I went from janitor to board member, you know, in the last 30
right.
years.
Well, that's an interesting background, you know, you think about it, because I think many of us, we are driven to this and we're compelled to work in this industry.
Yeah.
You know, we could say we have a higher calling, right, to be here.
Yeah, for sure.
But, and we also always say kind of, you know, like outside of our mouths, we say, yeah, we've always been patients, right? So we're also customers of our own health systems. But in this particular case, you know, being able to find that direct kind of tie-in makes it so much more meaningful, right?
Yeah.
Like you mentioned, right? The intersection of good marketing communications, technology, and clinical, that to me is like the sweet spot of what healthcare can be.
Totally.
Right?
Love it.
Right? And so, but I think what the overarching part of that is the overall experience as well, right? Because you know, we're treating people that sometimes are in a very, very critical spot. You know, we all have, you know, I mean, we're not all having babies, which
right.
is a lovely experience.
Yeah.
But, you know, most of the times people interact with us, they're coming to us in a sensitive, from a sensitive emotional area.
Oh, for
right?
sure. Yeah.
So you had a keynote.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about it, because it was interesting how you never actually mentioned anything about technology.
Yeah.
So let's get into that.
Yeah, that's true. So yeah, I was very fortunate. I'm very blessed to, one of my best friends is Chris Ross. He's a CIO at Mayo Clinic. And he had this horrid cancer episode twice. And at the same time that he was going through this, like in 2018, 2019, reoccurrence of 2020, I also had cancer at a previous other weird episode of healthcare happened to me that was pretty significant. And so we're like, whoa. And we were comparing notes and we're like, man, if this experience was the way it was for us, imagine what it is for people who aren't insiders, who aren't executives, who have access to Mayo Cleveland Clinic and who have access to, hey, I can call a doc. I know the doc, you know, that sort of thing. And it's got to be hard. And so we had this idea about, well, let's write a book for our colleagues, you know, and come up with a lot of new ideas. And so we started going down this path and we'd had focus groups because we knew that we were a particular, you know, we were middle-aged white men and bald, but handsome. So we realized not everyone's like that.
Yeah.
You know, they're probably not handsome like we are. So we did all these focus groups with diverse populations of patients. And then we did focus groups with executives, diverse executives. And then as we started formulating the book, we realized that, wait a second, we've been talking about patient experience and engagement for a couple of decades in healthcare and haven't moved the needle much. And so why throw in another book at that? Let's write this book for the consumers. So this book is actually for the consumers and it's meant to be a hand that they can hold through their journey. And so out of that, that's really where we went. So Mayo Clinic Press is the publisher and that's all set to be released next year. Now, we also, because of all this experience and the things I just shared with you, we had this whole load of really important information that we could share and wanted to share with our colleagues. And so that was really the presentation, the keynote yesterday was really about, hey, we've discovered all this content that we think will really help move the needle and it's probably different than what you think. And so we really boil it down to five things. But you know, the overall thing is really that technology, and this is why we didn't emphasize technology. Technology doesn't ensure a good or bad patient experience, but can be the enabler of either.
Right.
So there are more important things than the tech. And if you don't get those other things down firmly, the tech won't make a difference. It'll just make a bad situation worse, or if everything's aligned, a good situation better.
Right. It'll reinforce the good and the bad,
yeah,
so to speak, right? I feel that way too. I'm a digital guy, right? So I spend a lot of time with health systems on digital, and I agree with you 100%. It's really an enabler,
yes,
for the things that actually matter in our care experience. Because see, you mentioned you have five things that you wanted to bring forward.
Yeah.
Do you want to? Should we go through them?
Yeah. So I can unpack them a little bit.
Yeah.
So the first one, and none of these. Well, first of all, four of five of these are free.
Yeah.
So no one can give me the excuse I don't have a budget.
Right.
All it takes is vision and leadership. So the first one, and again, before I go into it, I also want to say this, that you do not need an office of patient experience. You do not need a chief patient experience officer. Now, if you have them, great, because they can do the same thing. They can enable, they can maybe speed things up, but in some cases, they can make things worse.
Yeah.
So what we found in our research is that you can have a great patient experience at any hospital and a bad experience at any hospital at the same hospital. So that's one thing. And it didn't matter if you had a chief patient experience officer or not. So don't say, well, we can't do these things because we don't have one. No, you can do a lot. So, and the last preamble is, because I know all the defense mechanisms that come up.
Yeah.
So I just want to address those straight on. The other one is, well, I can't impact that. And to that, I say, absolutely, you can. So I don't accept that either. Because you do what you can within your circle of influence. So I don't care if it's two people, I don't care if it's yourself. If it's right, it'll catch fire in the organizations. I can give you so many examples of this happening. That's the way I've lived my entire life, led my entire life, was starting small and it catches fire.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the first thing, and nothing, it's not be nothing new, but people aren't doing it well, is this whole culture of empathy. And so sometimes you have to train for empathy. And I know that's kind of like, well, I can train for empathy.
Yeah.
So I say empathy is caught and taught.
Mm.
So what I did is I took all my team, and we're talking 13, 14, 1500 people, and put them through formalized training. And we did measurement. And so we knew beforehand, you know, they have this empathy scale. And then after the training, we let a few months go by and retested, and empathy went up. Engagement went up of the employee.
The employee engagement got improved.
So you can train for it. Now it's better caught than taught, but you can do and should do both. So that's one thing, is like start training for it. So maybe there's someone in your organization, maybe you have to go outside, but start training for it. Show how important this is, just like you would train them for anything else. if they don't see you take an action, it's not considered important, no matter what slogans you come up with.
Yeah. So, you know, and I'm working in health systems, right? At first I was like, are you really going through and telling people you want to greet patients with a smile and a handshake? And if you see someone lost in the hallways to do that. And I thought, isn't this common sense?
Yeah.
Right. But in many cases, you need to reinforce the little things, right?
Yeah. And it's like, that's why I would, getting super practical and free is I would have all my leadership meetings at locations where there were patients. So we never had a meeting in IT. So I was a CIO of some health systems, never had our leadership meetings in IT. We would rotate. We had multiple hospitals. So 1 week we'd be at hospital A, then hospital B, and then hospital C. We would go to the various institutes. So, you know, year's time, we would catch everyone like 1.2 times. They're so big, you know. And then when you go to these places, you see patients naturally because you're in a hospital.
Right.
Instead of a tower somewhere. And then we do tours. So we always insist, like, we meet with the leadership of that hospital and then we ask them for tours and we see patients. There's something that happens when you try to connect, you know, the brain to the heart. And when you see the patients, that really connects it because it's no longer theoretical. It's no longer classroom. It's like you're actually seeing it. You're like, oh man, that's why I'm here. Right. I got to help the situation. So that's a big one, the whole empathy piece.
Right.
The second one is also like, oh yeah, of course we do this. Everyone would say they do it, but I'm going to challenge everyone on that. Mm-hmm. And that is to make a patient-centric culture. So yes, for sure, you know, ensure that there's shared decision-making and things like that.
Right.
And you can influence, no matter what your role is, chief marketing officer or information officer or digital officer, you can influence that. Getting super practical and free. There's so many things you could do. One is I always had meetings that would begin with two speakers that were external. People are tired of hearing from me all the time, right?
Right.
And it's like, of course, Ed says that because he's the leader. And they're right. So I always had a patient and a clinician. And the patient would come in. It was hard because I would follow these people and almost all of them were tearjerker stories. And so we'd give the patient carte blanche. They just knew that, hey, these were over 1,000 different people that help with technology. And they just want to know about your experience and any interaction you had with the technology.
Mm-hmm.
And the patient stories, again, were such tearjerkers. And you would see the whole team just crying and connecting. And that's when you get the empathy again. And then that's when you realize, oh, we are here to serve patients.
Right.
And then next would follow by a clinician. And the same thing, they would tell a story about how technology is helping them with their life balance, or maybe it's helping them with their clinical practice, whatever it might be. And again, no time on the podcast to go into stories, but a good half of them were tearjerkers.
Right.
And so then I'd have to get up and follow that. I was like, man, what am I going to say? And then half the time I'm boo-hooing myself. Mm-hmm. And I was like, geez, this is not a good look here for the CIO.
But to think about it, like you're hearing from the actual customer
that
IT serves, right?
Yeah.
The technology team serves because they're both important customers.
Yeah.
That only strengthens and reinforces that commitment that you have to doing your job better. I can see how impactful this is.
Yeah, and again, because the sake of brevity, I won't go into all the other examples, but there's so many things you can do, but one or two more that are directly for the leaders. Mm-hmm. And one is volunteer every week. So I volunteered every week. I worked in a hospital, and I went around, did all the things I already talked about, but I still wanted to volunteer one day a week because it just helps as a reminder. And so I just, you know, I picked an area that was close to my office, so it was easy for me to get to.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was an outpatient chemo clinic, and I would just talk to patients. I'd get them coffee, get them water, get them pillows. Their family might or might not be there. And so I always spent the most time with those without family. Think about how lonely that is. They're getting chemo treatment, and there's no one there with them. And so, man, you get super connected, and then you also talk with clinicians. That was important. And I know this next one's a little harder to do, but if you really want to do it, you can. I also served one shift a week in the OR. So from 5 a.m. to 1 p.m., I served in the OR and I went back to my anesthesia days and I served as an anesthesia tech. And so anyone can be trained to do help in the lab,
right?
Help in nursing. You can get trained and if maybe it requires a credential and you can get the credential. But I mean, that is life career changing. So every week. And then I got connected with, I learned more about the physicians. I knew about the patient experience in the OR. So that was sort of like the third thing was, hey, patient-centric culture.
So powerful,
yeah.
Too, right? And that's, I mean, and I heard stories like through the pandemic of hospitals, like where the call center staff, the web people, would go and volunteer
yes.
and help with directing people to get their vaccines, et cetera, and how that transformed the way they thought of their role.
Yeah.
Because now you feel you're connected to that care.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, these are great.
Yeah.
I'm excited. Let's keep going.
All right, yeah. So number four is look at things as a service, not a product. So I'm a big product person from an agile angle. Like, you own products. That's fine. That's good. But oftentimes we think of products like this. Okay, we got revenue cycle and we have the whole experience with a revenue cycle. We have maybe a patient experience, you know, and they try to hold, you know, take responsibility for certain things. And then you might have sort of the clinical product that you're giving. Mm-hmm. And then you might have the scheduling product.
Right.
And those products in good organizations are really good. They have good process flows and all this stuff, but they're not jointed.
Right.
So instead of looking at it vertically, look at it horizontally. Mm-hmm. It's better to have mediocre verticals with excellent horizontal to create the seamless patient experience we all talk about and dream about. But because everyone's so focused on their silos, you hardly ever get that service orientation. So think about things as a service, like for a chemo patient, for a surgical patient, that whole continuum, not just the different silos. So that requires a complete rewiring. That's why it's not done, because we're so used to, well, I'm this chief financial officer, I have this domain.
Yeah, I own money.
Yeah, right, yeah.
I'm the digital guy.
Yeah.
I own the websites. I am the online appointment scheduling guy, right?
But
it's natural silo that goes on.
Very natural.
Yeah,
but knock it all down.
Knock it.
And go horizontal.
Love this.
Yeah.
So
free.
And
it's free.
It's free, right? It takes a lot of resolve. And a lot of fortitude and a lot of working and partnering with other organizations. And really being empathetic to your fellow coworkers.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure.
When you pull together like setting up like a digital front door strategy, you want to pull in all of these people that can be impacted in the customer journey, just having them in a room together to just talk about like, well, this is what we're trying to solve for.
Yes.
That is tremendously, it could drive not only a rapid development of solutions, right? But it also builds that alignment, allows us to now understand what the other person, where they're standing from. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. So the final one is the one that costs a little bit of money. And it is the closest we get to from a technology standpoint. And it's really about, you know, digitizing what you can.
Yeah.
And so, but first you got to get these first four things rocking and rolling like we established. And then you come in with the digitization. Otherwise, you're going to make bad processes worse and things like that. So one of the concepts we talk about that's foreign to many people is the concept of the digital backdoor. So whether you like the naming convention,
right,
put that aside. We all sort of know what we're talking about. We say digital front door, you know, make it as really easy as possible to come in and to get treated. But we lose patients on the back end.
Yeah.
So there's like a black hole that a lot of people talk about. So when you create a digital front door, think about it in a complete continuum. Again, service, horizontal. And so don't forget about the patient after they're discharged. And often we do, and it costs us money actually when we do that because we have to get readmissions that we probably don't need. We get poor experience. We might get poor ratings, which impact our revenues. So really think about that digital backdoor. And so the whole concept of digitalization, where whatever pathways you can, you know, automate them to make things really easy. Sometimes we get too complex. So if we go back to the digital front door, we make it so complex that the adoption rate of these digital front doors are pretty low. They're less than 50%.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just need a text message.
Yeah.
A simple SMS. And you click on that link and it does something. Because, you know, I go to a very, and I won't name where it is or the name of the health system, because I truly respect them. But I go someplace that's pretty decently known and most of the experience is automated. I still get a
clipboard.
Clipboard.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my gosh, you even know when I walk in and everything and you still hand me a clipboard. And so don't do that. You know, fully automate everything so that you don't have both things going on. And of course, I do believe for those patients who do not want the automation, you got to be omnichannel.
Right.
And so you have to have a pathway, much like an airline does, you know, for you today.
Yeah.
So that's the fifth one, is really digitize what you can, make it easy.
Right. And, you know, you use the term digital front door. I always say digital front door is a misnomer.
Yeah.
First of all, it's not purely digital. There are offline channels. There's, you know, the way patients go through their entire journey, sometimes it bounds between digital and traditional and, you know, offline and online, you know, a lot of different ways that they engage with you. It's also not a front door.
Yeah,
right?
I agree.
There's a back door. It's a side door. It's this door. They don't do it just as they come into your health system. They do it when they leave the care setting and they're now looking at like, what's my next step? What are my records? That sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's all over the place. So I like this concept of like it, digitizing is important. I agree with you, but this is great. And this is amazing. And this is great. I can understand why you can give a whole keynote at a technology conference without mentioning technology.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for your time.
Yeah. Well, hey, thanks for having me. It's great to be a part of your podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks.
Thank you for watching live from HCIC 2023. We hope these insights have sparked new ideas and conversations. A special thanks to the industry experts featured on our show and to Greystone, Bowstring Media, and Touchpoint Media for making these discussions available. For more episodes and exclusive content, please visit greystone.net, touchpoint.health, or subscribe through your favorite podcast listening platform. If you want to be part of more conversations like this one, please make sure to attend the Healthcare Internet Conference in Austin, Texas. You can find more details at hcic.net.